That's the only.
This is something I was thinking of the other day. I own a gravel, and I watched the rock go into that, and I come to the city and say, I wanna buy that rock, and then I mine all the rock out, resell it, and then I don't pay my taxes and give it back to you. There's $1 million worth of rock in that lot, and how are you gonna control what happens to that after we sell it? And even if you have to excavate for outside or level it out, it's built on a hillside, so they're gonna have to go back in and whack it out and kind of notch it. Now, are you gonna restrict what happens to that rock that you notch out and whack out to the outside? I see some real problems with us selling this lot. How are we gonna control what happens to that gravel and that?
I mean, you can't just say nothing can leave the lot.
Right.
Or you can't build a house on it.
Right. No, good point, but that did come up.
Okay, and I just wondered, I figured that somebody probably already brought it up, but I.
Yeah, and it was our idea because we thought about that, and DEC, we could certainly approach them again.
Well, I look at that site like we're gonna have to make a damn parking lot. I'm not sure we can do that without some problem down the road on what happens to the material itself. I don't know what the state's gonna require of this lot. But I don't know that it can ever be used as a residential.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Who's gonna wanna buy it? Except for me when I'm buying the gravel out.
Well, I said I would sell up our grassy lawn.
City hall lawn?
Yeah, the city hall lawn, that's perfect.
When we have.
We could go bury them in the muskeg.
But we could certainly approach them again about that.
Well, this is the concerns I would bring up to them.
Sure.
How are we gonna control this? What happens when you go level that site out and try to put a house on it? Are you gonna restrict the materials from ever leaving that site?
Maybe have to rezone.
Well, I mean, even if you rezoned it, they could still do that, yeah.
Are you ready?
Yeah, we're ready, well, everybody's there. We convene this assembly meeting at 8:13 PM. Item 12E, discussion of the memo from Robert Rain, WMC CEO, regarding the True Grid Contractor Billing Services Action Plan.
There's no motion.
Discussion or action?
It's just discussion. Anyone care to open discussion?
Sure. First of all, Robert, why don't you come up?
Robert, let's have a discussion.
I guess I know this is before your time, first of all. So we, Kim provided us their kind of minutes from that discussion in the past, and from the minutes, in my recollection, the idea was when the assembly approved the contract with TruBridge, it was kind of a critical time, cash flow, there was a really big crunch. There wasn't unified opinion about using TruBridge, but we kind of agreed to move forward at that critical juncture, given the sort of a commitment from Wrangell Center to consider and look into in the future if there's a training option for local staff to get trained in billing, something that would address the issues better in the future. So we have more of those jobs locally. So your response to us, we see in your letters, you're nervous about it, there's these issues, this, that, and the other. I'm wondering if it might be a way to approach this to sort of quantify what you're talking about in a cost-benefit analysis. In other words, like, just look at this a little bit closer, because it may be, I don't know which way it will fall, that, you know, the issues you outlined, maybe the savings might outweigh the cost of those issues. I don't know, maybe they don't. But it would be something more concrete to give us.
Right. And I appreciate it. First of all, you know, I
With that said, it is a two-year contract, and we're just finishing up, coming into 1 year. So still, and we're still starting, we're still seeing the benefits from this transition. It had cost us, for last fiscal year, it cost us $206,000, I think, roughly, for them to do their job of collecting and bringing in that bill. With that said, in order for them to collect that $200,000, they had to bring in $9.4 million to us. So it was kind of a, you know, kind of a no-brainer at that point in time that, you know, obviously there's some benefit to that. And they said we're still seeing some benefits of that. I do want to make sure that everybody understands that for somebody to be able to take on the medical billing capacity in a hospital, it's not a two-week orientation, here's a book, you know, it's about a one-year training program to be able to do it and to the point that at some point they can be independent in doing that. So even when we get to the point that, you know, we get close and start looking at it and start deciding if that is what the path we want to go, we're still going to have a one-year overlap and make sure we budget for that, because I'm going to have three FTEs to budget for this if we pursue this, as well as still have the contract with TruBiz to billing until these folks are up to speed and be able to take that over and independent. With that said, three staff, given what and medical billers get paid, when you add roughly 40% benefit package that we have, that $200,000 is going to be exceed by having and bringing on those other three FTEs within the organization. So, but I totally understand what you're saying as far as trying to keep as many jobs as we can. But we're not unique to this, and I'm sure that was shared with you guys when this came out over a year ago, that Brigham Medical Center is not the only one that's looking at outsourcing their billing program. There's a lot, most facilities do that, including EACS, and I'm trying to defend our decision making, but it's not just unique to our field. With that said, it's still on the table. I mean, we're not looking at it, but given what we're seeing and how quickly that's being accomplished, and with all, and just in the short time that we have outsourced that, the billing procedures have changed. I mean, Rose, who used to do this beforehand, and you know, that's the other thing I want to make sure everybody understands. Nobody lost their jobs in this transition. It just allowed them to focus on other responsibilities to help streamline our workflow processes. But even in the short time that TruBridge has taken over the medical billing portion of our operations, the regulations have changed and the process has changed. And each insurance company is looking for more and more ways of, you know, of doing. And we run into timely filing issues, not just in getting the first bill out, but even the tertiary bill. So if we have challenges getting the bill out, you know, to get, you know, the insurance company A to pay the bill, then we have this domino effect, and by the time search gets it, which is sometimes the tertiary, we've got that year on, you know, in year into the books, and therefore they don't pay us because we exceeded that 1 year mark. And so the timeliness of getting this out is very important as well. Again, I'm not opposed to it. I'm just trying to make sure that it's the best from an operational aspect for the hospital. It's one thing to create three jobs, it's another to make sure the other 75 employees I have still have a job because, you know, we pay our bills. And as you guys know, it's roughly costs us about $1 million a month to operate.
I have a couple of concerns. The first one is Mr. Hammett was here during that talk, and he was aware of exactly what we had requested. And that none of that information, and I understand that the former CEO is gone, but Mr. Hammond is still the CFO, and none of that information went back to your board. And we were pretty adamant about this, wanting a report back in 6 months. Now, I'm not holding you responsible, you weren't here, but Mr. Hammond was, and he's the CFO. And that bothers me, because that motion barely passed out of here. It passed by one person with very specific stipulations that never flowed back to the hospital board. So I'm concerned about that, and I would sure hope that in the future, if we send something back, it arrives to your board and that action's taken to get us the information or come up with a plan or whatever, however it was proposed. So that does worry me. The second thing that worries me is the general trend that I see in healthcare. And I'll tell you what that trend is. That trend is that, gosh, it's changing so, and I'll tell you, I've heard this about your job, and I've heard this about other administration jobs in our community. It's just so complex. How can local people handle this? We need to get the big hospital up north to come in and administrate. The former CEO spoke to me quite adamantly about who should be managing our hospital because we can't do it properly here. And it worries me that this trend of farming out to other companies down wherever, or giving up things to other hospitals, or whatever it might be, if that's where the community winds up, to me it's just one more sort of nail in our coffin, and I worry about that. I don't doubt that we're not behind the eight ball now, because the people who used to do that job haven't been doing it, and things do change. But I think we really have to take a hard look, because I could probably make that case about a lot of administration. It'd be way better if Peace Health, because they've got a bigger infrastructure for billing and for our payroll and all that. Why don't they just take over all that stuff and do that somewhere? So I want to be cautious how we proceed with that. And finally, at the end of the day, I think the community is going to have some tough decisions to make regarding health care. And I think what this assembly was trying to do, was to encourage that CEO to really take a long, hard, creative look at how we can preserve our hospital, our nice, wonderful hospital, right here in Wrangell under local control and with local people working. And whether I think it might have been Assembly Member Decker suggested, gosh, could we look at teaming up with the school so that graduates come out and they're done? And as it turns out, my son can do a medical billing course now in his grade 12 year through the school. So that was really what we were pushing for, and somewhere there was a disconnect between here and the hospital board. And it sounded like we were just meddling, I don't know, but we really were trying to encourage the CEO to take a long, hard look at things and keep things local.
With that said, CJ, I understand the frustrations of trying to run a small organization, and so there is certain aspects to keep the doors open. I preserve my job as well as the interest of the community. I think we should pursue as much as possible to keep their independence, but there is some cost benefits of outsourcing certain resources, certain tasks of the job. A good example is, when you're in a bind, we're utilizing all these travel nurses because we have to have that, and I just can't bring somebody off the street to do that job, so we have to outsource until we can bring in our own and have that available. We're very fortunate. We've got a couple of folks that are new grads. One of them is a local person that's coming back, Ariel Longmire. I'm not sure if you guys remember, but she actually started a couple weeks ago, so we can orient those folks. And so I totally appreciate what you're saying. But the other challenge I have is with billing is very crucial to our operations as far as making sure our money gets timely. Even with three full-time folks, one person's on vacation, I just drop my workload by a third, and that means a third of my bills aren't getting out, a third of my collections aren't getting aware. By outsourcing it, they've got a pool of folks like this, so when one of their people take a vacation, out of 30 people, it's not even a dent in their day-to-day operations. But I'm very sensitive to what you're addressing. And I also want to make clear, I'm not ruling off the ability to take this back in-house again. My concern is I want to make sure that if we do it, it's sustainable, not just just as a fix to satisfy the board and making sure that we checked off the box and say we did this. I need to make sure we do it so that it's 2 years from now, I'm not coming back to you guys and saying, hey, look, this didn't work, I need to go back to it.
Go ahead.
And we totally appreciate that, I think. And that was the idea when we asked for a plan. The last time we talked about this, we asked for a plan. In other words, you look at timelines and how long would it take to do the training and how many, so nothing happens overnight, and that was the idea of like a plan. But it would be kind of a workforce development plan, I think was that concept, so.
And that was one of the things that, Patrick Meyer and I talked about with ANSET coming on board, that was part of that concept of that, with that school, was that there were some automatic programs these two ladies were here during that crisis situation a year ago, and it's very, so I get the history lesson, some of the challenges we had, some of the nightmares, and some of the concerns that we couldn't pay the bills and those kinds. Because as I said, even a year that we've taken it off our plate, rules have changed so much of how even Medicare and Medicaid requires some collections. The big change is just from ICD-10, ICD-9 to ICD-10, and how the coding gets accomplished and how that trickle down is ongoing and other aspects.
I just had a couple of comments. First one, I'm sorely disappointed that somebody from the hospital board isn't here. And I don't believe there was at the previous meeting when this issue come up, best I can recall. You know, that may have been the big problem, is that nobody from that board is here to go back and tell the other people what happened. And I realize you weren't here at the time, and it, you know, you had no idea until this memo was sent, to my understanding. And then that is one big issue I have. And then how much has this helped the receivables? Are they any better?
Timeliness, yes, they have. We still have, even with the aspects of things that we're doing in-house, before the bills get submitted and sent out, there's things that we have to do, and that is making sure we got all the medical records piled. We code for the services that we've done, and then as well as getting charges lined up for those particular codes. We have some internal processes that we have to work on that we're improving on, but from the aspect of the billing itself, when that bill goes out, and the timeliness of getting that bill out and getting the collection made, as well as getting those second and third bills, secondary and tertiary payment sources, that is what's been significantly improved.
Bill will go out in 3 days.
Yep.
Okay, that was not my question. My question was the accounts receivable. From that time that went to TruBridge to now, have they improved?
Initially they did, because in order for them to take over, we had to clean up a lot of our other workflow processes. And I'll be honest with you, there were some things that we had to do with before, even outside of that, there was internal that we maintained that were not sustainable. And there's been a lot of, and I can make excuses of that, but a lot of it's got to do with staff turnover at those jobs, and which has not allowed us to keep on track with that, which we are fixing, we're addressing, and we're moving forward with the changing workflow. But that is not the fault of the billing outsourcing. That was an internal challenge that we have, because we made some, this is a cleanup that was not sustainable, and we stayed on track with that.
But the bottom line, is the receivables any better now than they were then? Yes or no?
Yes.
They are, as far as the aspect of the outsourced, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I have one final thing that I hope you can take back to your staff, but your compliance officer added that there's a significant risk which Wrangell Medical Center would be taking on to have the billing done in-house. If we contract out that billing, then the contractor takes on the risk, particularly in regards to potential information leaks, HIPAA violations. I guess I find that a little bit off, because a lot of these employees are from here and maintain HIPAA, and what it's sort of saying to me is, we can off this liability by giving it out, and then we don't have to worry about people talking about what they see in our building. And I would hope that, I know that privacy is a huge issue for the hospital, and that should never be a question, that if you have an employee, they're trained appropriately regarding HIPAA and the law. But I don't want this to ever become a reason to off ship jobs out of our hospital, that then we don't have to worry about somebody talking about because really everybody's from here except for the travelers. So
part of that too, Steve, is kind of the bigger picture. Everything we do anymore is all electronically submitted. So part of the risk is that you accidentally send something to the wrong insurance carrier, or you accidentally send something to the wrong email address. So there's that risk associated with sending confidential information outside of within the violation system. So it's not just, Susie's talking about this case that she saw down at the grocery store because, some grandma came into the ER. It's kind of bigger. It's
But again, they ship medical records back and forth from your facility to other facilities. They send x-rays back and forth via whatever. I mean, that's a fairly common standard practice, but I just don't want that to become a battle cry for shipping jobs away, because we don't want to send something by. And my guess is that this department is still shipping a lot of information, transmitting that information, because somehow they have to get the billing information, so I would imagine that shipped electronically. So I don't really see that in terms of why we wouldn't look at bringing it back. Okay, thank you.
Just one thing. We did talk about this, and we had asked the hospital board to put together a plan. Nobody ever got back with us on that. I would venture to say, I can't represent the rest of the assembly, but I would venture to say by the time this comes up at the end of the two-year contract, it would be very beneficial for us to have some kind of plan to at least look at and consider before we vote on making any kind of decision rather not to renew the contract.
It was, you know, I think it was pretty clear that the assembly wanted these jobs to stay locally, if at all possible. And the plan he mentioned was that some kind of plan to be developed toward that end. And I noticed in your memo, the response to the memo, that you said it may not be feasible to recruit, train, and retain this kind of help. Medical building staff are in high demand. It would be likely that after training and getting some experience, our local staff will move on to an employer that could cover a more lucrative package than WMC could afford. I don't think that's a very good statement. I mean, my personal experience, my wife has worked in billing there for 35 years, and she has no, until October she will be there, or until the end of the year she will be there. And has any plan been to train anybody to take her place when she retires? But that's the kind of thing there, you know, that, and I know Rose, how long you've been there?
15 years.
So I don't think that's really a valid argument there, quite frankly.
I think that part of the discussion, you know, obviously this is kind of a synopsis of the board's discussion, but part of that was just to understand that it's just like, you know, if you train somebody, it's not guaranteed that they're going to be with you for 15 or, you know, 40 some years. It's just understanding that you're going to have to be, it's going to be evolving, just like with nurses, that it's going to be, it's not just a one-time fix, it's going to be ongoing as far as maintaining the sustainability.
I can completely understand that. There's no guarantee that you train somebody that you're going to stay here. Right. But it's been, historically, it's been the opposite. The people have stayed in that job. I think the one other person that works in billing has been there something like 10 years or something like that. And she's the junior person in that department. So, you know, I think it's more of a concept of selecting the right people for the job. And that's why we agreed to this, and to allow the 2 years to be able to find people, to train them. And quite frankly, there's 14 months that's been wasted, in my viewpoint.
I think one thing that is missed is, if in a town this size with so little professional opportunities, I see this as a really nice professional opportunity. And if you get a resident that's here, you don't bring somebody in and train them. You get somebody that lives here that's part of the community, and I really think you do get longevity, because there's not that many options. You know, when you look around the town, there are a lot of people who would like to have a job that's a, you know, 9-to-5 or 8-to-4, or whatever you guys work. But, you know, a regular job that pays a living salary and, you know, not have to work four jobs to make a living here. And I really think that we're missing something if we don't train somebody that lives here to do a job that's a real profession. And, you know, it's not a deckhand on a boat, not that it's bad, but it's seasonal. And it's but do you know what I'm saying? I mean, I really think we're missing a great opportunity to train someone that would be such a dedicated worker, because that's the opportunity that is here.
But I also wanted to make sure, I mean, again, within the healthcare industry, nursing is only a 2-year degree, and we have challenges getting folks to do that, and that's a very high-paying profession. So medical billing is not quite as lucrative in the salary line, and so having somebody commit for a year or longer to train on that one is also going to be a challenge. So I just want to make sure everybody understands that.
But it does happen. Roxana Koblenz is a great example. She works in the lab, and she was trained up through the system, and she came along, and now she's a great lab technician. Maureen Maxent, Ernie Bliss, they didn't come to the community as lab tech or a phlebotomist or a x-ray tech. They were trained up through your hospital for those positions, and now they're able to stay in the community with a great professional position. So I guess it is done, and it does work out for us, because we could, you know, probably farm out some of those things. I don't know what, but I agree. These are potentially positions for young people to come out of high school, work towards, whether it's an online thing or whatever. I don't know how it works, but with support from the community hospital. And that's all we were looking for.
Right.
That's all we were after.
I hope you guys understand. I'm not pushing back here, right? I totally understand what you're coming from. I also have to make sure that we, whatever we do is sustainable and not just a band-aid so that I don't, you know, that, you know, fix it, you know, with the understanding with, and then have to come back to you guys, because even at this point in time, as I mentioned before, if we do feel that we can do this and be sustainable, there's still going to be a 1-year overlap of having these guys do it as these other folks get trained. And then if somebody leaves, I have to contract with them to cover that time until I get somebody else hired and again, or until you're fortunate to recruit somebody from another facility that has that skill set. And it's being that we're down to three people that have that core skill, but it's not something that we can do a lot of cross-training with as well. But I will, now that I'm aware that they were supposed to have a plan in